Okay, after a couple of weeks break, we'll continue where we left off in terms of Bishul v'Shabbos. So we spent most of the time in the last couple of shiurim talking about the source of heat and to what degree the heat is, the klivishah, the klisheini, the klishlishi, what is the klivishah, what's not a klivishah. But now we're going to move out of the realm of the source of heat to the actual food itself. What kind of foods is Bishul going to apply to? Any kinds of foods that are not even subject to Bishul in the first place. So there is a major machlekes that we've shown him, both the practical machlekes, and we'll see as we go on a very important lomashim machlekes, as to whether Bishul could take place on food that itself is edible before it's even cooked, namely food that's raw. I have an apple, I have a carrot, I have foods that I can eat in the raw state, and then I go ahead on Shabbos and I make myself a baked apple. I go ahead on Shabbos and make myself tzimis. I go ahead, for those who are under the age of 25, that's can't cook carrots with honey and Rosh Hashanah kind of stuff. So the person takes the food that's edible raw and then subsequently, quote unquote, cooks it, is that called Bishul or not? So Tosfos in the fourth breath of the second Shabbos assumes there's a double portion that yes, that would be Bishul deraisa. Tosfos actually talks to apples. Tosfos talks about there used to be some kind of a dish that was apparently common in the days of the Balei Tosfos, that they would, it was some kind of a, the description sounds almost something like an apple chont or something. I can't exactly figure out what their recipe was, but they would leave it on the, from before Shabbos and it would stew up over the course of Shabbos. So, and there were apples in there. So Tosfos says you have to be very, very careful. If by some chance you want to like begin to uncover it and then to recover it or something during the course of Shabbos, so Tosfos says you have to make sure the apples are cooked, because if the apples aren't cooked, so then you're going to be violating Bishul deraisa, because if a person makes something cook faster, that's a very, very serious problem. Let's say I have a raw piece of chicken sitting on the fire, and it's on the fire ready. It's going to cook in a few hours anyway by itself, but I go ahead and I put the pot back on the flame. Let's say I take it off and put it back on again. So when I put it back on, I'm what's called the kruve bishul. The Gemara says explicitly that to be makari bishul, to make something cook fast, there is also a problem. It's a problem in the Torah. That's why it's called the maisa bishul. So Tosfos says you got to be very, very careful, very weary with this with these apples, since they're not necessarily fully cooked by the time Shabbos rolls around. So you have to be careful that you shouldn't violate bishul deraisa in them. So you see clear from Tosfos, even though everybody knows the apples raw, Tosfos was concerned with the problem of bishul on them. And the Rambam doesn't seem to say that. The Rambam describes bishul on something that's inot tzarech bishul, which Rabbi Kivager and others interpreted to mean something which is nechach moshu chai, but in fact would not be bishul on such an item. So where does this machlokes come from? What is this all about? What's the longness of this machlokes? So there seems to be almost like a basic fundamental question that's taking place, which is going to keep on repeating itself throughout the Malacha of Bishul, as to what exactly the very essence, the very definition of Bishul is all about. Is Bishul almost like a halachic process in the sense of there's a very objective halachic definition of Bishul? You take food and you expose it to X, Y, and Z form of heat, and it transforms that food. That is Bishul Amud Batorah. Whether what you did accomplished all that much in Olam Hazeh doesn't really interest us too much. As long as you pass the threshold of a halachic bishul, then you're in violation of bishul in that Torah. But do I say no, that bishul is something that's more in sync with what are you accomplishing? Is it something that's productive? Is it something that is meaningful? Is it something that's significant? So if you took food, you take a raw chicken and you cooked it, that's pretty significant. You took a raw piece of fish, you cooked it, that's pretty significant. You took an apple that I could have eaten anyway a minute ago, and I go ahead and I make it into a baked apple, what's the difference? What am I hiding on? What did I accomplish exactly? So I'm lacking almost in that, in the very essence of what bishul is all about. If bishul is more in sync with something that's a physical tikkun, so then something that's edible raw, I'm not really accomplishing all that much. Maybe that shouldn't be bishul. If you want to reword it a little bit, so usually when we learn with Sefer Shabbos, they used to always give this mashal. They used to always say, who makes the call on bishul? Who decides ultimately whether the malach on bishul took place? Is it something that is decided in the Beis Medrash? Because there's no way we should take this in any bad way. Or is it something that's decided in the kitchen? I said, who makes the call? Is it that there's the Rabbanim, that there's the Chachamim, there's an official formal halachic definition of bishul, and therefore X, Y, Z happened. You took a raw food and you exposed it to heat, and now it's a cooked food, halakhically. That's bishul. You could have eaten it beforehand, and you didn't really accomplish it. Well, it doesn't matter. You did a halakhic maisa bishul. So I say, no, Bishlul is decided by the cooks, Bishlul is decided in the kitchen, Bishlul is decided by the people who know how to cook Shabbos meals, not the people who are sitting in who know how to eat Shabbos meals. So who makes the call? Bottom line for most of us, does your wife make the call that's called Bishlul, or do you make the call that's called Bishlul? I remember I was, years ago, when I first got married, so I used to give Hilchos Shabbos shiurim in the Stern. I used to give a couple of different, I used to give one series of Hilchos Shabbos shiurim, I used to give some other Hilchos shiurim. So there are a few of the women in the community who were my students back in those days. So the Hilchos Shabbos shiurim were divided into four different semesters. You didn't have to take me for all four, there were four different semesters. So I divided up, one was called Hilchos Shabbos in the kitchen, one was called Hilchos Shabbos throughout the house, one was called carrying in Muktzah, and one was called the positive mitzvahs of Shabbos. So I got some flack for the first title of the first semester, that I thought that Hilchos Shabbos in the kitchen was degrading. I thought that I was like making fun and saying that I'm teaching in Stern College, I'm teaching Hilchos Shabbos in the kitchen, the women belong in the kitchen. I didn't see any discrimination. There was no men. There was no. There was nothing negative about that. I said, "What do you want me to call it? It's Bishul. It's taking place in the kitchen. What do you want me to call it? Hilchos Shabbos on the moon. It's Hilchos Shabbos in the kitchen." So I didn't understand what they wanted. I kept the name. Anyway, this is the Lamed Shishayla. Who makes the call? Who determines whether Bishul is violated? Is it a pure halacha or is it based on something of mitzvahs? So there is almost a parallel area of halacha. I see it's very, very relevant to Lamaise as I look at the donuts today. I saw there was a little bit of a scare before the shir that maybe somebody wasn't following the rabbi finally gave you a kulan. Nobody would want to avail themselves of it. So there is a din in Bishul Akum, if you have food that's good for a non-Jew, so we know that that's prohibited. Mid the Rabban, according to most Rishonim, because of chastas, we're afraid it may lead to intermarriage. So that's a Mishnah Masechta Mitzvah in the second parak, that Bishul Akum is prohibited. So the Gemara tells us in that sugya Bishul Akum that if something is Nechal Kamoshu Chai, it is not subject to Bishul Akum. If it's something that could be eaten raw, then the goy could cook it for tomorrow, that wouldn't be a problem. Let's say if a goy cooks you tzimis, a goy cooks you a baked apple, those things are perfectly okay. A goy cooks you a cup of water, and heats you up a cup of water, why isn't that Bishul Akum? That's not good in the water beforehand. So any time that the goy does something that I could have done beforehand, that's not considered to be Bishul Akum. Just parenthetically, the reason why most of us are makel to have coffee or tea that was made by goy, I'm not talking about the kashrus issues of a coffee establishment, because that's not the topic right now. But just the mere fact that we're going to go into a Jewish restaurant and the goy makes me a cup of coffee, makes a cup of tea, that's not so posh. Why is that more fun? So if it's a cubicle, it's one opinion that says that the reason why that's permissible is because you're basically drinking the water, and the water is the ikar, and the water is nechal kamo shuchai. The coffee beans are not nechal kamo shuchai. The tea bag is not nechal kamo shuchai. But that's like bottle, that's like tofu, that's like secondary. You're really having just a flavored cup of water. That's a very lovely shishat. Yes, most people, they go to Starbucks, or the Akron, wherever they're going into, or nothing donuts. So are they having basically water with a little bit of a clock coloring in it, or is it a cup of coffee? So the Pistach Shuba put two opinions about that. So the oil is very makel on this. They assume that the coffee and tea made by goyim is okay. It's not a Bishul Akum because of that gula. Anyway, so the mice in the Gemara says this din, that if a goy cooks you carrots and apples, that's not called Bishul Akum. So Rashi, instead of Beit, with the Gemara that did also, Rashi writes, the reason why it's not called Bishul Akum is because that's not called Bishul. He didn't do anything. What do you want? The guy didn't do anything. So that's Mishkin Bishul. So that seems to be very instinctive around that. It sounds like it's really a din in Kol Tarkula, both for Dinim Diraisa of Bishul B'Shabbos and for Dinim Dirabon of Bishul Akum, that Bishul that doesn't really do anything practically in Olam Hazeh is not considered to be Bishul. Therefore, on Shabbos it wouldn't be a problem in a Torah, and in Bishul Akum it wouldn't trake up the food either. But what about those like Kol Tarkus, those who hold that there is no such Klal Godol that Bishul is only on things that are not edible raw. Is Bishul even on apples? Is Bishul even on carrots? So according to Tosfos, why do we split between Bishul Akum and Bishul B'Shabbos? The answer probably is that the standards are very, very different. That Bishul B'Shabbos depends on, is there a Maisa Bishul finished? End of discussion. Bishul Akum depends on something much more, namely, is this a kind of a Bishul that's going to get me close to the Goyim? Is this going to be something I'm going to socialize with the Goyim about? So if a Goy comes and he makes you a steak, and say, wow, unbelievable, I couldn't have eaten that steak, because only Mishra Goyim eat raw steak, so I would never have eaten a raw steak. So only Mishra Goyim eat raw steaks. Go back a couple of weeks ago. But now the goy comes and makes me a steak. What a curse of time. I give him a hug and I say, wow, what a great thing. Thank you so much. Then I come over to his house. He comes over to my house and Nebuch, Nebuch, down the line, Chastas comes in. The goy makes me tzimis. He comes and he presents me for Rosh Hashanah a bowl of tzimis. I said, what do I need you if I have to marry his daughter to get a bowl of tzimis? I could have eaten raw carrots also. The boy comes and makes me a baked apple. I could have eaten a regular apple. I don't want to have a baked apple. It's mushy, ochi. I want to have a regular apple, crunchy apple. So the guy didn't do anything for me. So whenever the guy does an act of bishul, if it doesn't have that effect of kirav hadas, of having a little bit of closeness, so then that's not considered to be a bishul on them. So again, according to the Rashi and the Rambam, whenever it's an echok moshu chaya pi halach, it's not called bishul, bein b'shabbos, bein b'shalachom. According to Tosfos, it appears to be, it's really fundamentally called bishul, and the only reason why it's mutter b'shalachom is a little bit of a quirk. And when you learn the sugyas of b'shalachom and Shulchan Aruch, so you would walk away with this conclusion, because the Shulchan Aruch writes the din that anything that's an echok moshu chaya is okay, but the Taz on the spot writes, because there's no concern of chastos, that's the words of the Taz. So it sounds like it's a no-brainer, he just took it right out of the Taz. The only problem is, if you look carefully, that the printer made a mistake, that he put the wrong letter on the wrong statement of Shulchan Aruch. That when the Taz made that statement, he was explaining why, if it's something that's in Olo Shulchan Malachim, is not a problem. If it's something that's very cheap, like the donuts, why is there no Bishalachim on donuts? We said last week of Rosh Hashanah, a couple of days ago, we said Rosh Hashanah, the reason why there's no Bishalachim on donuts is because it's such a cheap kind of a food, you don't serve it in fancy dinner, you serve it at Sunday morning Shia. You don't serve it at a chas, you don't serve it at a state dinner. So it's on that din in Shulchan Aruch that the Taz writes, that then, by the way, he said, the reason is because there's no kirav hadas, you're not going to come to marry them. So the print of the Shulchan Aruch didn't chop that, and he put the Maariv Malkum in the wrong place. So he put it on the other statement about Nechal Moshe Chai. Maybe the Taz said that also, but that was a mistake. Every once in a while, you have to be careful. Sometimes a statement can be made, and it's just the print of goof, they put it in the wrong place. That's the famous Rashi for this week for Yom Kippur, where it says in Parshas Emor that Yom Kippur has to be a Mikra Kodesh, and it says that Sukkot, all Yom Tov, have to be Mikra Kodesh. So Rashi writes, quotes from the Toras Kohanim, what does it mean to be Mikra Kodesh? To wear nice clothing. So the printer put that Rashi on Sukkot. So you have to wear nice clothes on Pesach Shavuos also. So why did the printer put it on Sukkot? Because he made a mistake. Because that Rashi meant to write it on Yom Kippur. As the Toras Kohanim says, what do you do on Yom Kippur to make a Mikra Kodesh? You can't drink, you can't do the regular things. So the only thing Nebuchadnezzar Yom Kippur can do is you have to dress nicely. So Rashi wanted to highlight on Yom Kippur, Mikra Kodesh means to dress nicely. So the printer didn't chop. As he put it on the wrong, put it four Pesukim later. So he put it on the Rashi, you put it on Sukkot. So you scratch your head and wonder, why did Rashi say it? You know, the answer is, you don't have to scratch your head. He didn't say it. But in Rachman, he didn't say it. So you have to, and some of the Nechumash, they chop that already. They chodesh the man, they moved it back to where it belongs.
I forgot what the Rav said a few months ago, but when the Rav said that when it comes to preparing vegetables for like a salad, so it's got to be close and then it can't be cut up finely. But wouldn't Rashi and Ram say that those vegetables, right, which are, right, there's the grain, so you don't...
I mean, the vegetables are edible already.
So yeah, they're edible already.
So Josh is making a good time. You're saying, what's the difference between bishul and tochen? They're different malachas. One is bishul, one's tochen. So Josh is saying that just as bishul, when I don't do anything, I'm not really accomplishing anything, so that's not a malacha. So that's exactly what the Rush says. You're 100% right. The Rush of the Sefer Shabbos says that there's no issur of cutting vegetables. You cut vegetables as small as you want, because, so what are you doing? It's ochel, it's vayt ochel. So many of the Rishonim disagree with that rush, because many of the Rishonim, the Gemara says that if you cut something very small, it's okay. So many of the Rishonim learn the Gemara is talking about vegetables, and the rush says, no, it's talking about cutting wood for firewood or something. It's not talking about vegetables, because vegetables, there's no tochen, just cutting a piece of food into little pieces. So it's interesting, because what should come out is that according to the Rambam, it should be okay. If your logic is right, so of course it's hard to compare malacha, but if your logic is right, so then it should be mutter. So the Rambam actually writes, Echol techasei yarek, kidei levashlo. The Rabbi writes, when you cut a vegetable for the purpose of cooking it, Yechai Mishim Tolkien. So the Chaznish was medayik that the Rabbi meant dafka kedil vashlo, exactly for your reason. Because he felt that the Rambam held, a guy cuts a cucumber into little pieces. What's the difference? A big cucumber, a little cucumber, what's the difference? But if you cook, let's say you want to cook, potatoes out of whatever, so you want to dafka, make it into fine pieces to cook it better, so that would be a problem. So, no, there are some Rishonim who say that, but we don't bother with that. Okay.
Also being on a practical level, like, vegetables and vegetable soup, let's say there's no chicken or whatever, by cooking it up, I'm going to eat a soup, but I'm not going to eat a bunch of raw vegetables in water, you know, so there is something to the actual cooking up, even on the side that...
Okay, it's a little something, okay, but apparently that's not sufficient. According to the Rambam, that wouldn't be sufficient to be over the threshold of issue. So there is a...
Did I miss something? But we talk about things that could be eaten raw, like a baked apple. If you took a raw apple and put it on a blech to make it baked.
So according to the Rambam, that's only an Issa Dirabban. According to Tosfos, it's an Issa Diraisa. So they can't do it. They can't do it. According to the Rambam, it's only an Issa Dirabban. According to Tosfos, it's an Issa Diraisa. There is another halacha that's very much related to this, and that's the famous sugya called Ein Bishel Acha Bishel. Once something is already cooked, so then it's no longer subject to Bishel anymore. Now, before we go into the intricacies of this halacha, just as a quick statement beforehand, that for the Rabbanan reasons, there are many, many reasons, there are many issues involved in just putting food back on blocks and fires, etc. There are a whole series of other halachas, hopefully we'll get to them down the line, not today, but we're talking now purely from the realm of Hilchos Bishel, just from the deraisa issue of Bishel. Something that was already cooked is no longer subject to the issue of cooking. Most people think this must be like a Befei Rishon Gemara, Befei Rishon Mishnah, must be like Halacha Moshe, Ein Bishel Acha Bishel. Those words, Ein Bishel Acha Bishel, to the best of my knowledge, do not appear anywhere in Shas. It is, the Rishonim coined the phrase Ein Bishel Acha Bishel as a way of explaining a certain din that appears in the Mishnah. There's a Mishnah in the end of the Shabbos that 99% sure sounds like it's describing that phenomenon called Ein Bishel Acha Bishel. But there may be one dissenting view in Rishonim, but the Reuben, Shulchan Aruch, and Belishim Safek, we pask, and there is such a principle, a level of deraisa called Ein Bishel Acha Bishel. However, what exactly does that mean? One of the parameters of Ein Bishel Acha Bishel, so we just spoke about this. Once you get into Chodesh Tishrei, you don't know when days were, what weeks were, what day of the week it is. I think it was all last. It was all last Friday night. If I'm not mistaken, we spoke about the barbecue. We spoke about the barbecue Shabbat. Yeah, I think it was two Friday nights. Two Friday nights. No, it wasn't this past Friday night. Two Friday nights ago, so we spoke about the barbecue Shiloh. So there's a big machlekes that we showed him about when we say Ein Bishel Acha Bishel, what exactly does that mean? How mavushal is it the first time around in order for it not to be a problem the second time around? So the Rashba writes in the second Shabbos that the cutoff point for Ein Bishel Acha Bishel is the identical cutoff point as the first Bishel, namely, what's called Bishel in Halacha? What point do we say you violated Bishel in Halacha? So the Gemara says explicitly, if you take a raw piece of meat and you throw it on the fire for a little while and it reaches Michael ben Dursai. What is Michael ben Dursai? Ben Dursai was a ganav. He was a very, he had some special schus because besides stealing everything, he also became very lomdish. That personally meant all the halachas of Bishel revolve around him. He was the example that Chazal used. He was the illustration of a guy who eats things on the run. He never cooks his food entirely. He's always running away from the cops. So ben Dursai is the model of what we call Nechel Aydeh Pchat. The food is cooked to the point where it could be in under extenuating circumstances, but a normal person wouldn't need it that way. How much is that practically? So it's a shalom misham, is that a third cook, a half cook, something like that? It's not fully cooked, it's a third or a half cooked or so. So the Gemara says, if you take a raw piece of food and you put it onto the fire and it reaches Ben Dursai, Nachal Ben Dursai, that's called Bishul Terai. So it's not a shalom, that's partial in the Gemara. So now comes the Rashba and says, okay, once we've declared it to be Bishul, so now we can kick in the following rule, Ein Bishul Acha Bishul. That if it was Bishul the first time around, then it's not Bishul the second time around. So if you have, let's say, if Reuven took a raw piece of meat and put it on the fire on Shabbos, and it reached back to the Sir Reuven's Chayev, if Shimon takes that same piece and puts it back on the fire, he's not Chayev, because it was already Bishul, and therefore in Bishul Acha Bishul. And the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says, no, that's not called Ein Bishul Acha Bishul. The Rambam says that even though it's true that the first fellow was Chayev, the seventh fellow is also Chayev. Why? Because Kozman, that it wasn't his bashel kotzarko, that it wasn't cooked to the point of completely and totally cooked, whatever that means, so it's still subject to bishul, even on a level of deraisa. That's the Rambam's chiddush. What's the nekudas of machlokes? What are they arguing about? Why does the Rashba put the line in the sand and says, Michael ben Dursai, it's over, it's done, it's history? And why is the Rambam willing to extend bishul even later? So this seems to be part of the old story, namely, who is determining thresholds of bishul? Who's making the call on bishul? Well, according to the Rashba, it seems to be a very, very halachic statement, namely, can a halachic bishul occur or not? So the answer is, yes, a halachic bishul already occurred. Okay, so the Rashba, so good, those eyes. Ein bishul, acha bishul. Once one halachic bishul occurred, one halachic bishul per item per cup, that's it. There's no subsequent bishul once halachic bishul occurred. And the Rambam disagrees. Why? What prompted the Rambam to disagree? So it could be the Rambam's almost l'shitasai, that the Rambam holds that bishul is not so much a function of the halachic universe, it's more a function of what's going on in the kitchen. Namely, did you do something that was significant or not? So the same way the Rambam held, when you make tzibis, you didn't do all that much. When you baked an apple, you didn't do all that much. Here, the Rambam's kula turns out to be a chumrah, because he did a lot. I took food that most people would not want to eat, and I made it delicious. I turned the Maichel ben Yusoy into an Izbashkot Tzorcho. That was very productive. That accomplished an awful lot. So that is subject to Bishul on one of their rises. So it almost sounds like these two Rambams are part of the same picture, two sides of the same coin. Namely, what's that take on Bishul? Is Bishul ultimately something that depends upon a physical tikkun, but our wives determined to be, you did something or didn't do something, that determines Bishul. Or is Bishul more of a halachic concept? How do we pass in halacha this machlokes, the Rambam and the Rashba? So the Bir Halacha writes in the Chashavis that we're not sure, but it's a very serious shayla. So therefore, we would never, ever, ever dream of putting food that's not as bashagol tzorcho back on the fire. Even though normally putting food on the fire on Shabbos is an issur d'rabbanan, there are ways to get around it, issur d'rabbanan. And we'll talk about them hopefully. The plot doesn't upside down things. Some things do work, don't work. You stand on your head, you put your bluffs here, put that. We come up with some kind of kunsim to be matter, some of those issurim d'rabbanan. But the araisas, you can't touch a araisa. So the Bir Halacha says that if you have a piece of food that's not fully cooked to the point of the Rambam's bashagol tzorcho, midaraisa, something the rest of the chumrah, something skewed, you can't permit putting the food back. What if a person went ahead and did it? He went ahead by mistake, he put the food back on, so then the Mishnah Berurah falls back in the Rambam. Then the Mishnah Berurah says that we have a problem. The Rambam tells us that whenever you have a machlokes, are you allowed to do something like chatzilah on Shabbos, even though we will refrain from doing it? But the diavad, if the tea we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, the diavad, if it was done in a way that's mutter according to some, the diavad will let you eat the food. So that's what the Bir Halacha's psak is, that if a person should not be putting the not fully cooked food back on the fire in any shape or form. If for whatever reason it happened, you find yourself in an uncomfortable situation, but the evid, you'll be permitted to eat the food. I once found myself in a very, very awkward position, a very uncomfortable situation revolving around this machlokes d'Rambam and the Rashba. It was years ago, before I was married, I was invited to one of my friends who had gotten married before me, and he invited me over, a few months after he got married, invited me over for Shabbos lunch. So we came to, I was sitting down at the meal, and they were... wife was about to bring out the schnitzel, and then she was about to put the schnitzel onto the hot plate or whatever it was to heat it up a little bit. So the husband whispered in her ear that, you know, last night they ate the schnitzel. It wasn't like 100% done. You know, maybe it wasn't 100% cooked. And that was a shayla, according to the Rambam, maybe you shouldn't put it back on the hot plate. You put it back on the hot plate, it's going to keep on heating it up. Maybe a chashash of vishal deraisa. So she responded, no, he was totally, he said, no, I'm not sure. So now the husband and wife and children were showing, were fighting out whether the schnitzel was cooked or not. And of course, I was the Yavon Kosovo Shlishi, so they asked me, I think I'd eaten the other night before, not mistaken, I think I'd eaten by the Shabbos. They'd eaten the other night before also. So they asked me, what did you think? Did you think the schnitzel last night was cooked or not? So if I answer that, absolutely, so I would just mock her or something against their eyes. If I say nothing, it was absolutely terribly wrong, so I just was going to break down and start crying. So what am I? So I said something like, you know, my taste, I haven't been feeling so well, I'm a bit cold, my taste is a bit hard. It's hard to assess the schnitzel, it's not my more forte these days. Maybe you test it on somebody. So anyway, back to this story.
It's supposed to psych mess.
I was 30 years ago, I don't know what happened.
According to the Rambam, if one wants to put something back on the fire, is there a timing issue? Let's say one realizes that, oh my gosh, they put it on the fire. So,
should yank it off right away.
And they shouldn't leave it until it gets totally unedible on fire.
No. Just take it off. Take it off. The Gemara says, the Farish, the Gemara talks about the beginning of the Shabbos, if a person puts dough into the oven, you ever go to the when they show you in Eretz Yisrael, you can go watch how they make pita, you know, 4,000 years ago. So they do with Diyas HaPas. So they stick the dough, like the old days, onto the edge of the oven. So the Gemara says, let's say a person by mistake put the dough into the oven on Shabbos, they totally forgot it was Shabbos. So now the Shabbos, so they allow to scrape it off the oven. Normally, to scrape dough off the oven is this, a drabana, it's called Rudiyas HaPas. So can we let the guy do Rudiyas HaPas in order to avoid violating this of their Isa? Because if he leaves the dough on the oven, it's going to mamish bake, it's going to be chayav skila. So he too lo lurdos, kadesh lo yavo. So the Gemara is a whole lomdash asugya. What if I saw somebody else did it? I see another guy put dough on the oven. Can I violate Nisa Derabban to save him from Nisa Deraisa? That's a loaded question. There's a lot of terrors in that question. But again, that's beyond the scope right now. But to see for that whole sugya, that better just get it off. Theoretically, get it out as best. So we have a somewhat of an unresolved machlokes. I guess this was the source for those who were not here last Friday night. We spoke about the shayla, the kitz and imrats. So the question was raised, when you have meat, let's say rare or medium or something, and you want to put it back on the hot plates and you want to heat it up a little bit more, so should that pose a problem according to the Rambam? Should one say that the rare, the medium meat, that's not considered to be mevushal kotzorcho? And then according to the Rambam, there could be a potential shayla. So a few years ago, when that shayla was first posed to us with catering issues, the caterers apparently used to prepare a lot of meat for before Shabbos for all their events, and then they wanted to have the option of putting it back onto the fire. So the question, putting it on the hot plates or something, so the question was, do they have to be concerned if some of the meat that they're putting on is not what we call quote-unquote well done? So at the time, I was very nervous about that. I thought it was a chashash of the Rambam, and then I was corrected by some of the experts from Eretz Yisrael, some in Bergenfield, who were also born into the same idea, who all seem to be pointing in the direction that when you have meat that's rare, medium, that's not called mechabedusah, that's called mevush gotzocha. Some people, 1 million people, like the meat well done. Some people are still nervous about raw meat, so they like the meat well done. But you can't say that the guy who's eating, if you see a guy eating a medium steak, you say, guy, you're a nut, you're a sugar, you're a ganav, you're running from the cops. Yeah, that's usually not our approach to people eating medium steaks. So therefore, we can probably assume that's called mevush gotzocha. So if all the other rabbanim on the bottom are going to be masking the animal, to go along with it also. I don't know yet what the caterers do about that now. I can probably guess what they're doing about that, but I think we may have kind of unofficially reversed that position on that question. This idea of ein bishul acha bishul, so the same way we spoke earlier about whenever you have a din of Shabbos concerning bishul, a good place to check a parallel halachas or a bishul acham, so the same thing appears with bishul acham as well. What would the din be in terms of bishul acha bishul as relates to bishul acham? Here, it could almost work against us in the following sense. Let's say a non-Jew cooks a piece of food. A non-Jew cooks a piece of meat for you, and it reaches the point of Baicha ben Yusuf. And then gevalt, you realize that, oh yeah, you grab it off the fire, and I put it back onto the fire. Did that solve anything? Remember, we learned from the Sugis of Bishul Acham we mentioned last week, Roshan, we spoke about a little bit, that if the Jew participates in the Bishul in any shape or form, that's okay. That could solve any Bishul Acham problems. So here, is this called the Jew participating in the Bishul? So the Goy did it to the point of Baicha ben Yusuf, the Jew yanks it off and puts it back on again. Is that called the Jew participating in Bishul? So the Rashba says no. The Rashba Lashitasa says no. The Rashba says Bishul's over already. That's like the Jew reheating it. That's not called Bishul. The Jew has to help in the Bishul process. Here it's a very Mizbashel. He's going to the Rashba. Once it's Mizbashel, come back when the game is over. Bein Lekula, Bein Lechumra. And therefore, according to the Rashba, if a Jew goes ahead and puts it simply on the fire, that food remains as strength. You have to throw that, you cannot eat that food. And the Rush disagrees. And the Rush says, the better disagrees. The question is, why does the Rush disagree? So there are two reasons why the Rush may disagree. One, the Rush actually writes, and others add on another possible reason. So first to say, the one the Rush doesn't say. So according to the Rambam, it sounds like I should disagree. Because according to the Rambam, the second bishul is meaningful. The second bishul is not nothing. The bishul of Yisrael is enough to make him chayv skew for that, the equivalent on Shabbos. So according to the Rambam, it makes a lot of sense. And the Rush himself writes that even without the Rambam, it's still probably okay. Why? Mishum kule bishul acham sharokai. Since bishul acham is very, very limited. Bishul acham is not there, I see. Things that are abundant. We have so many kules that are from bishul acham. Things that should have been bishul acham, but they fall short. Donuts should have been bishul acham. Everywhere we turn, they're kules that are bishul acham. So the Rush says, Mestam chazal will make on this also. But even though it's not real bishul Yisrael, because the bishul was done already, but it's make-believe bishul Yisrael. So for the purpose of the bishul acham, that would be enough. So that there are more paskins like this Rush. That's what we paskin make really like this Rush. So this clue just went with a quick, very, very, somewhat of a humorous story. Years ago, we had a babysitter who used to like eat plantains. So plantains. They look like dried bananas, but the problem is that you can't eat them raw. So she used to like to eat plantains. My wife always turned on the fire for us, so she could make her plantains. So one time I walked to the house and it wasn't clear whether the fire had been on. I wasn't sure what was going on. And I suspected that she had actually cooked up, turned on the fire and started cooking up the plantains and had pots. So that's a problem. That could be a potential problem with Shalakal. So I asked her, oh, they look so good. I said, are the plantains ready yet? So she says, looked at it. I said, no, almost, not yet. I said, oh, good, perfect. Okay, so thank you so much. I picked the pot up, put it back down again. So that's Bishul Yisrael. So even if they were Nechal, they had Chaks, that's called Bishul Yisrael, because there are more rights to rely on the Svara of the Rush. Then afterwards, they realized that there ain't a Allah Shechel Lacham. Anyway, he said, maybe where she came from, the Allah Shechel Lacham, or maybe in Washington Heights, the Allah Shechel Lacham, but we lived already in Paramus at the time. So I don't think most people in New Jersey eat them Allah Shechel Lacham. So then, Yesh Macham Lachal anyway, they probably wouldn't have been a Bishul. Okay, hopefully, Mezzah Shem after sometime, I don't know, next week, haven't you? We'll see.
Yeah, why not?
It's her.
Absolutely. So. We're around. Okay. Sometime between now and next Shabbos, we'll decide what we're doing. Okay.
You could have just raised the.
You could have picked the cover.
Back to like every fancy
restaurant.
Like the number one appetizer, like every fancy restaurant.
You take that and now cook it.
Right.
To be such a high temperature, it's not like putting it on the flame.
Yeah, well, it does reach out, so let us go. It,